This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Pinot Noir. André Chalichev once said, "God made Cabernet Sauvignon, but the devil made Pinot Noir." What he meant by that is it's hard to grow, it prefers only really cooler climates, and it's difficult to extract aromas and tannins if you let the yields get higher. Now, Pinot Noir is a very old grape variety, and over its very long history, it's mutated numerous times to create all sorts of different clones or clonal variations of the grape. Some of those mutations have turned it grey, Pinot Gris. Some of those mutations have turned it white, Pinot Blanc. Whilst Pinot Gris and Pinot Blanc are technically just clonal variations of Pinot Noir, we do tend to call them their own grape variety now. Now, Pinot Noir is quite well adapted to being in cool climates. Along with Chardonnay, it's an early budding grape variety, which makes it suitable for cooler regions, but it does run the risk of frost in these cooler regions if you're not careful. It also ripens earlier, again, making it suitable for cooler climates. And like many cooler climate grape varieties, it does tend to have higher levels of acidity. And if you try and grow it in too warm a region, you often land up with these jammy, unattractive flavours. Now, I did mention that Pinot Noir's got thin skins, and typically colour and tannins come from the skins. If you haven't got much skin material, it's hard to extract lots of tannins and colour. So typically you expect Pinot Noir to be low to medium tannins, not usually particularly dark in depth of colour, but as I said, it's often got high levels of acidity in there. Classic flavours for Pinot Noir, well, if you get it a little bit underripe, it can have this sort of unattractive cabbage, wet leaves type aroma. Typically, you're looking at more the red fruit spectrum. So you're looking at things like strawberries, raspberries, red cherries. Some of the riper ones, the Grand Crus from Burgundy and Central Otago, you can sometimes get into black cherry aromas. As they age, the more premium wines will develop these tertiary aromas, forest floor, mushroom. Whilst you might like the flavours, and a lot of people are big fans of Pinot Noir, thin skins give you a lighter coloured, lower tannin wine. It also makes the grapes a little bit prone to rot. And we said it makes it hard to extract colour and flavours from the skins, particularly if the yield's low. And it is a low yielding grape variety. And because of that, you don't really get the economies of scale that you often get with some of the more higher yielding grape varieties. That makes the wines quite expensive. Let's talk about the winemaking. Now, one thing about Pinot Noir winemaking is extraction, because thin skins, hard to extract lots of tannins from it. But if you want to make a decent structured wine, you need to get the extraction right. If you over-extract Pinot Noir, you tend to overpower the primary fruit, and you'll lose some of that elegance and purity of flavour that you can get with Pinot Noirs. Now, there's a range of methods of making wines. A lot of people will start out doing a sort of standard situation. They'll get the grapes, they'll de-stem them, they'll crush them, and then we'll probably do a pre-fermentation maceration. The idea here is to extract some colour and flavours from the skins. At this point, some premium producers may add whole bunches to this, and the whole bunches undergo carbonic maceration. It's not really a proper carbonic maceration like you see in Beaujolais, where in Beaujolais they'll do a carbonic maceration and you'll get these banana and bubblegum style of flavours. This is more like a modified semi-carbonic maceration where you've got lots of juice, some whole berries in there that are undergoing a little bit of carbonic maceration. The idea here is to hopefully increase the tannins and create wines that have got a little bit of fresher and fruitiness to the wines. Over time, though, those whole bunches that are in there being made for premium wines, they get punched down. You punch down the cap quite regularly, and that breaks up those grapes into the wines, and that carbonic maceration then stops. As I say, not everybody does whole bunches. Some people will just do the normal de-stem, crush, maybe pre-fermentation maceration, fermentation, and then you're done. Quite often, to aid the extraction of colour and tannins, they'll often ferment Pinot Noir at a reasonably warm temperature, often above 30 degrees. Now remember, Yeast sort of stops fermenting around 35 degrees Celsius. So between 30 and 35 degrees Celsius is where you'd typically ferment a Pinot Noir. If you're making a very light, simple style of Pinot Noir, you might ferment it at a lower temperature, but as I say, for the more premium wines, 30 degrees. Typically, you don't do any post-fermentation maceration with Pinot Noir. That said, in some of the premium wines that have had whole bunches added, they may do a little bit of post-fermentation maceration, but it's typically not done for most people. One of the things about adding whole bunches to the grapes is you're going to be adding stems to it. And adding stems, people might do it from whole bunches. Sometimes they'll just chuck in a load of stems into the tank as well. Now, normally you've got to be a little bit careful when you add stems to the grape must. And that's because stems are full of tannins. Now, if the stems aren't ripe, those tannins can be very astringent and not very pleasant at all. Whereas if the tannins are ripe, they'll give you nice ripe tannins in your wines. So thankfully, Pinot Noir stems tend to ripen up quite nicely, and in the premium wines, they'll quite often add some stems in there, whether it be whole bunches or just stems themselves. Some grape varieties, like Cabernet Sauvignon, for example, the stems never get ripe, so you always de-stem Cabernet Sauvignon before you chuck it into your tank. After the wine's been fermented, a lot of Pinot Noir does undergo a little bit of oak work. That could be in oak barrels for, say, 12 to 24 months. New oak can overpower Pinot Noir. It is a reasonably delicate wine. It's not a big bruiser of a wine like Shiraz or Cabernet Sauvignon. And new oak can just overpower those lovely fruity aromas. So what you tend to do is you might have a little bit of new oak in your mix, but usually you're looking for second or third year barrels just to give it that soft and more subtle oak influence. If we look at Pinot Noir around the world, well, obviously the first region most people start with is Burgundy. And the reason they start with Burgundy is because that's where the grape came from. And some of the best expressions of Pinot Noir come from Burgundy as well. And Burgundy, there's five parts. You've got Chablis right at the very top, which we won't mention because they don't grow Pinot Noir. You've got Côte d'Or, which is where some of the best Pinot Noirs in the world come from. And the Côte d'Or is just this hillside in Burgundy, very famous Pinot Noirs and Chardonnays. As you come south along the Côte d'Or, where typically it's running southeast, so it gets lots of morning sun. As you follow it south, eventually it fades into Côte Chalonnaise. Now, Côte Chalonnaise is very similar. They grow a little bit of Pinot Noir in Côte Chalonnaise. Doesn't reach the high standards of Côte d'Or, but still quite nice Pinots. And then you get into Mâcon further south. Now, Mâcon is mainly Chardonnay. There's not really any Pinot Noir there. And the final region, the fifth region, is Beaujolais. Now, I'm going to say Beaujolais because a lot of people don't realize that Beaujolais is actually part of Burgundy. No one really wants to talk about it. But look it up, you'll find that Beaujolais is technically part of Burgundy. Let's get back to Côte d'Or. This is the most famous slope, and this is where most of the top Burgundies come from. Now, the Côte d'Or is divided up into two parts. You've got Côte Chalonnaise and Côte de Nuit. Côte de Nuit is at the top end, so if you think about it being a hillside running sort of southeast, at the top part, the northern, most eastern part, is Côte de Nuit. Côte de Nuit is probably the most famous for reds. I always think of Côte de Nuit as more reds than whites. And the other area, so the south and west of Côte de Nuit, is Côte de Beaune. Still on the same hill, but sort of separated into two parts. And Côte de Beaune is really, I think, of the best Chardonnays. It does make some Pinot Noir, but they tend to be a little bit fruitier. Côte de Nuit wines has got pretty much all of the Grand Crus except for one in it, and it makes the fullest Pinot Noirs. You'll hear villages such as Gevrey-Jamberton, Von Romanée, Neuilly-Saint-Georges. These are all very famous villages in the Côte de Nuit, which is part of Côte d'Or. In the Côte de Beaune, also part of Côte d'Or, it's really well known for its Chardonnays. It does have one Grand Cru red village, but it's also more known for its fruitier, lighter reds. Côte d'Or is on a slope and it's sort of northeast facing. What happens is that slope is actually quite handy. You've got a lot of weather coming from the west, and effectively the weather comes on, hits the other side of the hill, and some of that rain may be dumped on it. You do get a reasonable amount of rain in Burgundy, so a lot of it does make it over the hill, but it also provides protection from the westerly winds. A lot of the wind in Burgundy tends to come from the west, and it's a cooling wind, so you can use that hillside to protect you from that wind. When you look at the hill, the higher parts of the hill is the most exposed to that westerly wind, so it's the coolest part of the hill. And the nice thing about being on a hill is you get rain and frost tends to just roll down the hill. So if you are in a region that's a little bit frost prone, and Burgundy is a little bit frost prone, being on a hill actually is really handy because the frost just flows down the hill. If you get rain, then the rain just runs down the hill as well. What that means is at the bottom of the hill, it's wetter. It's also, as the rain comes down, it causes erosion. So the soils at the bottom of the hill tend to be richer and wetter, whereas on the hill itself, they tend to be thinner and it tends to be drier. Now, if you're trying to make premium Pinot Noir, thin soils, reasonably dry, pretty good. Also, the middle of the hill is usually the warmest part as well. So quite often, you'll find, if you look at a map of the Grand Crus, you'll find a lot of them are in that center part of the hill where it's warmer, the soils have got less nutrients, there's less rain there. It's a perfect place to ripen Pinot Noir. As we come further south, out of Côte d'Or, you get into Côte Chalonnais. Now, Côte Chalonnais produces red wines. It doesn't hit the high levels that you can get at Côte d'Or. And that's partly because it's higher altitude. It's actually a little bit higher. And because of the higher altitude, it's cooler. And because it's cooler, you find that the grapes ripen a little bit later. If you're up against the end of the growing season, that means the grapes can be a little bit less reliable. In a good year, you can produce some very good wines in Côte Chalonnais, but you just find it's a little bit less reliable than, say, Côte d'Or. The only other French region that's quite famous for Pinot Noir is, of course, Champagne. We're not going to talk about Fizz too much, other than say that it's obviously used for sparkling wines. And you know how we said it's quite well adapted to being cold because it's an early budder? Well, in Champagne, there's a region known as Val de Marne. And Val de Marne is actually really frost prone. And they tend not to grow Pinot Noir there because it buds just too early for that area. It would get hit by frost all the time. So they tend to grow the later budding Meunier there, which means it can avoid some of those hard frosts that you get in that region. In Europe, there's no real other region that has a particular reputation for Pinot Noir. In Spain, they grow it as a blending agent for cava. In Austria, they don't necessarily grow it, but they grow a grape a lot like it, Saint Laurent. I always think of Saint Laurent as being a Pinot Noir lookalike, so in Austria they do grow that. The only real region that has a reputation for Pinot Noir is Germany. And really in Germany, it's too cool in most places for it, so it's only in those southern regions of Germany, Pfalz and Baden, that you see Pinot Noir growing. In Germany, they don't call it Pinot Noir either. They call it Spätburgunder. Spät means late, so you'll see things like Spätlese, late harvest, Spätlese, or Spätburgunder. Burgunder, I think, refers to Burgundy, but you'll see the word Burgunder with a lot of Pinot Noirs, and I just think of Burgunder meaning Pinot. So Spätburgunder, late Pinot, Grauburgunder, which means Pinot Gris, Westburgunder, Pinot Blanc. So Burgunder, I normally just translate into the word Pinot in my head, and it just helps a little bit. In the US, they grow quite a bit of Pinot Noir. Really, you're talking about three regions. You've got Oregon, California, which are really managed to grow Pinot Noir because of the cool currents that run down the side of the west coast of America, the California Current, if you like. But there's also a little bit of Pinot Noir in New York's Finger Lakes District. And New York's Finger Lake District is quite far north, so it's getting the coldness from just being quite cold. And as a result, it can grow Pinot Noir quite well. Looking at Oregon, which is just above California. So if you think of America, you've got Washington State at the top, then you've got Oregon, and then you've got California. The main region for growing grapes in Oregon is Willamette Valley, and that's cooled by ocean breezes off the Pacific Ocean. Here, Pinot Noir is a definite dominant red grape in there, and it has an international reputation for it. The wines tend to be ripe, red fruits, maybe hints of cinnamon and spice getting in there. And they also tend to have quite high levels of alcohol. To grow Pinot Noir in California, you are really looking for something that gives you the coolness. And usually in California, they don't tend to grow Pinot up high altitude. So you're normally looking for coolness coming from ocean currents and ocean breezes to give you that coolness. So in Sonoma, there's a famous region known as Russian River that has morning fogs that work its way in and get Russian River nice and cold so they can grow Pinot Noir. Santa Barbara at the bottom of California also grows a bit of Pinot Noir in the Santa Maria Valley. And Los Caneros, which is in Napa Valley. You don't really think of Napa Valley as being Pinot Noir country. Well, Los Caneros sort of spans Napa Valley and Sonoma County. It's got a foot on each side of the counties, if you like. But Los Caneros gets a lot of morning fogs as well. And it's right on the San Pablo Bay, which means that you do get afternoon breezes coming in off the bay, keeping the area quite cool. As you move up Napa Valley, you get further away from the fogs and further away from the sea breezes. So Los Caneros is really the only place that they can grow Pinot Noir in Napa Valley. As you move up the valley, you get more into Cabernet Sauvignons. And in fact, if you get far enough up the valley, it gets so warm that they're growing Zinfandels. In fact, that whole concept of going from Pinot Noir by the coast, moving inland to Cabernet Sauvignons or Syrah, perhaps in some regions, and then maybe Zinfandel, is classic California. As you get further away from the coast, it gets warmer and warmer, and the grape varieties you grow change. Now, one region you don't normally think of as being cool enough for Pinot Noir is South Africa. It's at 34 degrees latitude, which is getting towards the upper limit where you'd normally expect to grow grapes. Most grapes grow between 30 and 50 degrees latitude. As you get closer to 30 degrees, it normally gets warmer and warmer, and you don't typically expect to see Pinot Noir at around 34 degrees latitude. But there are a couple of districts that do grow Pinot Noir. The key thing is you've got to get that coolness again, and usually you're getting by the coast. So as you come out of Cape Town and you follow the coastal road to the sort of southeast of Cape Town, you're going along the coast and you find you've got a couple of things going on. There's a strong wind that comes through known as the Cape Doctor. That's a very cooling breeze, and that is the whole of that southern coastal area gets hit by the Cape Doctor. But when that's not blowing, you've still got ocean breezes giving you lots of coolness. And it's that coolness from those winds that are super important for regions like Walker Bay and Hemelanard, which have got particular reputations in South Africa for Pinot Noir. Other regions such as Elgin, which is still pretty close to that coastal area, still get some influence from the breezes and the Cape Doctor, but Elgin also has a little bit of altitude, which helps keep it cool enough to grow a little bit of Pinot Noir. So in South Africa, it's really essential that you find those cool spots to have a crack at growing Pinot Noir successfully. Another region you don't think of as being cool is Australia. And they do grow Pinot Noir. The Aussies think they grow some pretty nice Pinot Noir. Usually you've got to think about where it's cold. And probably the coldest place in Australia is a mixture of either Victoria, Melbourne in particular, or Tasmania. And those places can be pretty cool compared to what we normally think of Australia, like Sydney or Brisbane. Victoria has got three reasonably famous wine regions all around Melbourne. Coming into Melbourne's harbour, which is known as Port Phillip, on either side of the heads, you've got Mornington Peninsula on one side and Geelong on the other. And they are surrounded by water, the ocean on one side and then Port Phillip on the other side. So there's lots of cooling currents there, which means that Mornington Peninsula and Geelong, again, have pretty strong reputations for Pinot Noir. If you get into the harbour of Port Phillip a little bit more and into the town of Melbourne, into the city of Melbourne, just getting out and into the Great Dividing Range is Yarra Valley. And Yarra Valley's got some maritime influence. It's also got some cooling from altitude as you climb up into the Great Dividing Range in Australia. Those give a number of different possibilities for growing Pinot Noir, depending on climate and exposure to the actual maritime climate. And again, Pinot Noir is made there. Pinot Noir is also used a lot in Yarra to make sparkling wines. And another region that has a reputation for making sparkling wines from Pinot Noir, as well as making Pinot Noir, is Tasmania. It's an island to the south of Victoria, and it's got a cool maritime climate. They can ripen Pinot Noir there. They can also make some fizz in Tasmania. Generally in Australia, apart from Victoria and Tasmania, we don't really think of it being a Pinot Noir country. It's just normally we consider it a little bit too warm. But one region that does have a reputation is Adelaide Hills, which is in South Australia. Again, it's by the coast. Adelaide Hills is normally planted at least 400 metres above sea level, so you've got some altitude, you've got a little bit of coolness from the coast, which means you can grow a little bit of Pinot Noir. They do also turn it into sparkling wines like they do in Yarra Valley as well sometimes, so a bit of red and a bit of fizz. The last important region for Pinot Noir, and to be fair, being a Kiwi, I'm a little bit biased, but it produces some of the best Pinots in the world, is New Zealand. So New Zealand's divided up into two islands. You've got the North Island, the South Island. The South Island is noticeably cooler. The North Island is noticeably warmer. Pinot Noir tends to grow in the South Island of New Zealand and a little bit at the bottom of the North Island. That area is known as Wairarapa, and in particular Martinborough within the Wairarapa has a reputation for producing Pinot Noirs. We're going to start at the bottom Pinot Noir growing region in New Zealand, which is Central Otago. And that certainly has an international reputation for Pinot Noirs. It's the only part of New Zealand that's got a cool continental climate. Most of New Zealand is reasonably coolish maritime climate. But it's cool continental, and it produces fairly full-bodied Pinot Noirs with high alcohols. The continental climate really helps with the diurnals, and it holds onto the acidity really well, even though you have these really high levels of alcohol in the wines. Moving north from Otago, you tend to get into Canterbury, Nelson, and Marlborough. These are all cool maritime climates. They're all growing Pinot Noirs. They don't tend to have quite the same alcohol as Central Otago, but again, producing some very nice Pinot Noirs. Martinborough, at the bottom of the North Island, as I said, it does have a particularly good international reputation for producing full-bodied, plummy, and spicy Pinot Noirs. I personally think they often have a little bit more savoury character to them than maybe some of the Pinot Noirs made in Marlborough or Otago, where they tend to be a little bit more fruit-forward. Okay, that ends our look at Pinot Noir.